Welcome to Foothold America's U.S. Expansion Minipod, Three Questions, One Voice. I'm your host, Joanne Farquharson, President and CEO of Foothold America. So if there's an entrepreneur gene, my guest today has it. It showed itself when he started his first business at the age of 14. I'm exceedingly excited to welcome entrepreneur Mark Shepard, who parlayed his VC and private equity experience into multiple companies, all built on the idea of community, with some good food and wine included. His current venture is Gather, a resource for founders, funders, and service providers to find each other, meet, and do business together. It's a joy to listen to Mark's stories and wisdom, and I guarantee you'll be inspired. You may even start your own new company ideas folder. Alrighty, let's get started with our three questions, hearing one voice, Mr. Mark Shepard. My first question to you is, how did your background in investment banking and venture capital influence you to start London Tech Drinks and Gather to support tech founders?
Yeah, so I've always been entrepreneurial. I think that's the thing, that's always been like kind of that kind of bone in my body. So I started my first business when I was 14, selling boat photos to boat owners. So I realized that boat owners had money because they had boats, but what they couldn't do was take a picture of their boat on the water. And I just always had this like inkling inside of me, and I was just always like, I just loved watching all these like entrepreneurial programs, how you can make money out of kind of nothing. I actually borrowed my dad's 35 mil film camera. So for those in the know that age, like back in the day, I stood on the pontoon outside the marina down in the south coast, and as the boats left, I would take the pictures. But with film, I had no idea if the picture was actually the boat was even in the frame. And it was actually a manual lens as well, which none of the probably younger listeners will understand what a manual lens is, but you had to focus it yourself.
Right. Did you develop it on your own too?
They went to Tesco's for Tesco's. Got them printed over lunchtime. came back in the afternoon, and then as the boats came back into the marina, I would basically run over to them and be like, "Hey, I've taken a picture of your boat. Would you be willing to buy it? Like, can I sell this to you?" And I first started off saying it'd be £3, and some of these boats are like £500,000. But I was like, you know, here's £3 for a picture. And this little 14-year-old kid would rock up to these boats, and but often people would be like, I've got a lot of rejections though, really interesting. I've got a lot of rejections. People were like, no, not interested. But that was my first kind of entrepreneurial thing of being like, not always going to get it. Started selling for £3. And then I was like, I distinctly remember being like, I want to ask for a fiver, but I feel like £5 is a lot of money. So I said to people like, can you pay me what you think it's worth and try that piece? And then instantly the minimum people would pay me went to £5 typically from £3. So it was like, here's an 80% uplift. And then I think in like, how can I cross-sell, upsell this and the rest of it? So I actually then got a paper photo frayed, then started selling them for £8, then started selling the digital prints for £30. Kind of went from there. But that was my first kind of taste of kind of entrepreneurship. And then coming to London Tech Drinks, so there's always that thing. And I've always been really obsessed with communities as well. Like I love meeting new people. I always say that as I was doing a lot of traveling when I was kind of younger in my student days as well, like every time you meet somebody, they shift your perspective on the world ever so slightly, left or right. I have my view on the world, and every time I meet someone, they might be a little bit further one way or the other way, and just like seeing their views on the world. And like 99% of the people you meet in the world are wonderful people. And that was always a thing of being like, well, I've had my experiences. Well, I want to learn from their experiences and their experience. And meeting these just wonderful people with kind of their own mission, their own vision and things like that. And I think especially kind of on the traveling side, but I also feel that a lot of entrepreneurs, and that's why I think I just love the entrepreneurial community so much, is people have just got these visions and these dreams of like breaking the status quo.
Oh my gosh, you have so nailed it. That is exactly why I love Foothold America. I love living outside of the country that I was born in. Your mind opens and you see things a different way. And whether, that's the conversations with entrepreneurs or just different people from different cultures. Great.
And so that was my kind of like first love of community. So when I went to university, and I'm a big food and wine lover. So food and wine is my biggest passion by far. And I was at university and I was thinking, you know, like, so I've got quite bad of anxiety. So I've got some anxiety disorders. Mm-hmm. And I went through this. I was a bit like, why do we all sit there cluelessly like worrying about all this stuff. And somebody above us in the year above us has been there, done it, and got the t-shirt. Like they've all been through this. And actually, why don't we just go and like meet other people who have been there and done it, can actually say, you know what, it's actually not that bad, or I've been through this and it's fine. And I was worried. So I actually, in my second year of uni, I actually started something called LMH Supper Club. So at my college in Oxford, basically started a dinner club. And I went to a local restaurant, negotiated the best deal on earth. Basically, it was like three courses with wine in the best restaurant in London, in Oxford, for £15. I kind of negotiated that, and we launched this. We brought 30 to 40 people together from the college, from first year students right up to PhDs, all who had a love of food and wine, just to meet each other, share stories, and build connections. And I kind of put myself out there to launch that, and the feedback was amazing. And actually, just seeing people on campus who had never met before, who were like first years and PhD students, so probably like 7, 8 years apart, but who could be like, oh yeah, I can help you with that, or like, yeah, don't worry about that, or let me support you on that. And that for me was just like, why don't we reach out to other people and get help and support on a journey? So that was my first like community kind of, and I just absolutely kind of loved it. I then graduated, so kind of that one fell flat, so I moved on from that. But it was just on my first kind of taste of that kind of a piece. And then I post that, when I then moved to London, I was actually meant to have a gap year. Or sorry, I had a gap year, wanted to start a business, and I was like, I'm going to start a business in my gap year straight after university. Kind of started going and was like, I have no idea what I'm doing. I have no actual like corporate commercial work experience or anything. I'm not technical. And so within a couple of months, I was like, I think it might be better if I actually go and get a job and learn some real world skills before I then just try and build something with absolutely no idea at all. But I'm one of those people that if you look at my laptop, there's always like, it's a business ideas folder. And then it's quite funny when you look back, there's probably like 70 different folders in there where I've had 1,000 different ideas of all the businesses I wanted to start. But then, yeah, fast forwarding a bit, came to London as a graduate and started something called Dinner Time London. So you'll see a theme here. That was my second community. And I was like, again, I'm a new graduate in London. Like, I've got my friends from uni, but I just love meeting new people, and I wanted to meet new like-minded individuals. So I just posted with a bunch of friends, was like, hey, I'm gonna run a kind of a supper club Thursday evening, 6 o'clock. The biggest issue there, realizing that we all kind of worked in consulting, banking, and law, and 6 p.m. on a Thursday was not possible for any of us to get out of work. So that one fell flat on his face pretty quickly. And then fast forward a few years, was consultant for a couple of years, learned all the, like, I met so many amazing entrepreneurs in my consulting journey as well. And I was like, I was doing diligence on businesses and growth strategy. And I was like, I saw well and good like working on their business, but like the people I get super excited about is the founders and their vision and how they built this amazing business. So spent a couple of years in that, then went to private equity, started getting closer to the entrepreneurial journey, but not quite there. Culture didn't quite fit me, if I'm honest, private equity. Like, I'm definitely a bit too much of a creative, out of the box kind of thinker, and very kind of high energy around that. And private equity is generally more traditional. So it's an amazing world, amazing way to make a lot of money, but more traditional businesses, and is less kind of super creative, out of the box growth. It's more about doing more of the same and kind of building it from there. But an amazing industry nonetheless. And I want to get closer to the founders. So then I went from private equity to VC, and you'll see my journey from and the VC I was then meeting earlier and
Now, let
earlier.
me guess, was it VC dinner meetings or
Yeah.
VC wine club?
Nice. And that's where London Tech Drink started. Basically, I started meeting all these as a VC. So I'm meeting all these early stage founders, and I was like, God, this is exciting. Like, seeing that 0 to 1 journey. And at Behringer, which was, I really enjoyed my time there, but that was kind of Series A, Series B. And I was getting more and more excited about it, the earlier stage stuff. And then, yeah, I basically at this point, like, the mental health wasn't great on my side, and my anxiety was an all-time high. And so I was seeing a therapist as well. And I was really torn because I was talking to my therapist, and I was like, I've got big visions and big dreams. I want to be an entrepreneur. I want to build something. But like, the anxiety is holding me back. And I remember her distinctly saying, is like, well, you're just going to have to put yourself out there and prove to yourself it's going to be okay. And so after about 5 year period of like really quite bad anxiety, I posted on LinkedIn to kind of combat that. Does anybody fancy a beer? I think it was like calling all lovers of food and wine, or fancy anyone fancies meeting up, sort of thing. Genuinely expected 5 people to maybe sign up, and I'd shut the post down, and I'd get back on with my day job. But yeah, within 24 hours, 100 people had signed up to the mailing list, and now fast forward, we've over 11,000 people have signed up. We're doing events for now for founders, we do events for VCs, we do events for private equity. The community is now about 5,500 investors from about 1,200 funds.
on one side, and we do like intimate educational breakfasts, we do drinks events and stuff like that. And then we launched on the side of that, obviously very proud to have Foothold as part of our group. We launched the kind of platform, and the platform is really like the Michelin guide of the services world. So really what we came to that saying, hey, I'm trying to build a business. Can you recommend me accountants, a lawyer, US expansion, marketing, PR, tax? And we were like, why is everybody in WhatsApp groups kind of getting quite bad answers on half of this stuff? Mm-hmm. So we tried to aggregate knowledge up and build what we're calling the Michelin guide of the services world. And we launched, 10 months ago. And I'm very pleased to say it is, it's still very early, but it is working.
Yeah, no, it's great. It's such a, it's so needed. And it's bringing different groups together who belong together. We need each other, VCs and founders and service providers. It makes perfect sense. And I think sometimes, you can learn a lot from the events, but sometimes the founder journey is moving so quickly, you're not getting the answer you need at the time you need it, or meeting the person at the right time. And it takes a while to grow your network. And so you've got a little bit of both. So growing authentic relationships, and also, hey, I need somebody that does this today. And I know Mark and Gather have vetted these folks. And I mean, even for Foothold America going through the process, it's like, yeah, well, we need to hear from your clients so that they're going to, make sure that what you're saying you're doing, you're actually doing. So, yeah, I think it's fantastic. And now coming up on the embassy event,
yes,
in a couple of weeks, I will be looking very hard at the hors d'oeuvres and the quality of the wine, knowing that that you're behind it. So
I'm not personally in the kitchen, but
I want to ask you a different question, because you have a particular, I think, insight into VCs and private equity, both with your experience building communities, and especially with Gather. So over the years, I've heard different strategies for founders to connect with VCs. And some VCs are like, sure, send anybody to me that has a folder with 70 ideas for new businesses, I want to hear. And then others are, you can't even talk to them unless you have the right intro. So do you have some advice for how founders can navigate the VC world and be successful?
Yeah, so we've actually been running a series of kind of webinars on this kind of like meet the VC and kind of how to raise from VCs. And we've had four recently. So I can kind of give you some of their kind of tidbits as well. I think fundamentally, every investor is looking for a great company, and that's just like full stop. The problem is that there is, I think from the stats yesterday she showed us, there's something like within their ecosystem alone, there's like 10,000 companies a year to look at, right? So if you look at that, it's like, if I do my maths, or something like, so it's like 30 companies a day that are coming in. So it's like, for that's 365 days a year. So if you make that 50 day companies a day, and so there's just a lot of volume of deals and a lot of things for people to look at. And so I think the thing is, like, every investor wants to meet a great company. So you need to make it as absolutely easy as possible in that 5 seconds they look at your deck or 5 seconds they look at your company to say, is this for me? Part of the biggest problem that all investors receive is like, so much of the stuff is irrelevant. So like, if you're a consumer brand in Finland and you're sending it to an investor that invests in B2B software in the UK only, it's absolutely not going to get you anywhere. Now, the problem is people still send that. And actually, that still doesn't help the VC, because then it's been clogged up with stuff that's completely not relevant. One of the things, so I used to invest at Series A and Series B, and I think it's very different. If you're at like pre-seed, seed, Series A, Series B, to private equity, like every single stage is a very, very different beast, really. The bar has got higher, I would say. So if we start at like pre-seed and seed, there is kind of little, unless you're in a regulated industry whereby you cannot operate unless you have an FCA regulation or a health debt regulation, there is a big argument to say there is less and less excuses for not having revenue or customers. Like, the technology is getting easier to build. Like, there's so like Shopify on consumer goods, like you can get things like made for you custom anywhere in kind of the world these days. Mm-hmm. If you can't sell something,
yourself, then why should the VC then think just because you have a quarter of
Exactly.
£1 million or £1 million you can sell it?
Exactly. Wow, very good point. So I think what you're saying is bootstrap from the beginning and, get further in your proof of concept before even going pre-seed, would you say, or?
Yeah, so I think when we look at there's like two camps. There's like the stuff where you're like, I need a lot of money to build this because ultimately this is a huge piece of deep tech. So like deep tech, regulated industries, quantum, hardware, you'll need money. Now, if you need like serious cash, that's when you raise from a VC pre-seed and does that. If you're doing like light touch B2B software, if you're doing consumer goods, like there's no reason you can't make some revenue before you even like start or even get kind of again enterprise. I think we need to kind of split the world up. So like you need B2B software like enterprise grade, probably slightly different. If you need to have like all the banking licenses and you're operating with investment banks to your market, that's slightly different. But the SMB, for small medium businesses on like kind of software that's like £29 a month or like a new tea brand or a new coffee cup brand, if you can't build a prototype and get somebody to give you £20 for something, then what makes you think raising £1 million is going to change that? And I think that's and I think with our story with Gather, like we had the idea for the platform. We built a Figma to start with. So the first we sold the first kind of 50 customers without even having a product. We said, this is what we want to build. This is what our vision is. This is our mission. Do you want to buy in? I think we sold to kind of 50 kind of customers before we even built the first kind of actual piece of tech. We built it on a Figma at £750.
Nice.
And actually, we then said, okay, we actually kind of need 9 months to build this. And if you remember, we kind of spoke to everyone. We were like, we'll be launching in 6 months' time.
Yeah,
But
no.
ultimately, if we were like, well, what's the point of us building all the software, building all the tech, and then coming to you and you're being like, nah, I'm not interested? It doesn't make any
Exactly.
sense. So I
Yeah.
think, like, and I know money is, we need to be very careful, like socioeconomic, diversity and all of that side as well. But like these days, you can build prototypes on Figma for £50, for £100. Get a designer in Fiverr to build you one for £100. And you can save up from, even if it's a minimum wage job, you can save up £100 for a while, just get that thing and then go and try. Ultimately, if no one's willing to give you any money or even any interest in it, then you probably need to think more about the overall business problem than the actual kind of product itself.
Right.
So I think at that stage the bar is getting higher with things like is it Blitz and Lovable and all these other tools that people are now kind of AI generated tools. Like you can ultimately
Sure.
build something. At the same time, the bar is actually changing because actually, like there's so many tools being created all the time. Actually, it's getting
Right.
kind of for the VCs to like separate out what's going to work and what's
Yeah.
not. Okay. So I think on that side, you ultimately should get as far as you can.
In the marketplace now, the founders that you're working with, are they of that mindset that you just described? I need to get it to a certain point, or do you see that as an evolution that new founders need to come to?
Every founder is different, I would say, to start with. And every founder has their own thoughts and thesis and different vision of what they're trying to build. Angels are a really interesting area that a lot of people just kind of think VC, but actually angels are really a really good way of getting your first 25K and your first 50K. And also, 25 grand is like a hell of a lot of money. I think people are like, oh, I need to raise a minimum of a quarter of £1 million. But you're like, quarter or half £1 million. Like, were you buying a house? Like, £500,000 is an insane amount of money. And I think it's quite interesting. I just raised a small amount. I only raised £3 million. And if you were actually going to be like £3 million lands in your bank account, and there's bootstrap people, you're like, oh, I started with £0 in my bank account. Like, I didn't put a penny into this company.
Yeah,
We have a
I
passion.
definitely relate to that. I definitely relate, so.
And I think that's that piece of being like, if you can get even an angel on board to give you 25K or 5K to start with, like, go and test it out with that. Like, go and see what you do, and then go on that journey, and then raise a bit more and raise a bit more. But I think there's definitely a bit of a guilt, and part of it comes in. And I was saying this on the podcast yesterday or the webinar yesterday with like there's no right or wrong between wanting to be VC backed or not wanting to be VC backed. And I think quite often the world that we live in, people are like, oh well, businesses that can't raise VC become non-VC, and I think that's completely just not true. I think the thing is,
Right.
it's like, journey do you want to go on? My personal thing is I would rather own apart from my team, but ultimately 90-odd% giving some to the team of the business and get to 20, 30 million valuation and sell and take home 20 million quid myself.
Right.
I would build a 200 million pound business, fundraise loads of money, maybe probably never get there, own 10% of the company, and then get the same 20
Right.
million. Like,
So
there's no.
when do you build the wine cave in your house? Because I know that's a priority, or maybe you've already have one. I'm just
I don't have one. I live in a one bedroom flat at the moment. So yeah, post hope for a future exit. The wine cave will appear. But with all this, I think it's like do what's right for you. Don't worry about what's on the internet. And ultimately, like comparison is a thief of joy.
Some of the things that you're saying, I consider truths that we don't often talk about because it's the bigger is better thing. Do you find that these are novel concepts for your founders, or do people get it?
I think I've only had the sort of mild epiphany in the last like 4 weeks, if I'm honest. It's a very new thing because I've just so got engaged 6 months ago, getting married next year, and it's like a large part of it is actually just being like, me like the family work life balance, having that like flexibility and things actually really important to me. And I still have the aspiration and goals to build a 20, 30 million, 40 million my business, which is by the end of the means it's still a big business, but like. I think for me, those other bits mean a lot more to me now. And actually, that kind of like balancing everything out. I think very, very often the rhetoric you see online is like massive business or nothing sort of area versus being like. And I think when you look at the private equity world, especially in most of the really, if you look at the really rich people on the Times Rich list, a lot of them are in like industrials, oil. They're in building, they're in like commodities, like they're not tech. They are like they're really, and that's obviously there's more tech money. Obviously, you've got people like, Nick from Revolut, and there's lots of billionaires who are forming in techs. But like a lot of big like money has been little businesses, and you meet private equity businesses. And like I met a company the other day, it's like fire servicing, but extinguishes fire extinguishers, doing like 4 million EBITDA a year. And so there's like a family-owned business pumping out 4 million of profit a year, like. Thank you very much. That's a very, very, very good income. That's like some more than all the top lawyers, bankers, accountants in the city. I'm 33. I'm probably going to work until I'm 75. I feel like I just love I love building. I love doing things. And actually, like, I'm never going to retire. Say I sell the business in 3 years. I'm never going to retire at 36. And so for me, it's like, well, let's say 60. It's been like that's 27 years. I'm gonna want to like as soon as I've done this first one, I'm gonna start my second, my third, my fourth, fifth, my
And
sixth business.
you're building, yeah.
And so for me, it's like get the first nest egg in, buy the house without a mortgage, have absolutely no financial worries, and then just go again with the learning,
Exactly.
and maybe sell for 100 million, then go again and sell for 200. I think a really good example of that's obviously like Elon Musk, and obviously everyone has different views on him, but he built his first business, so I think it was and he sold it to PayPal or it was PayPal and he sold it to something. 100 million exit or something, obviously a massive exit, but then he then put most of that money back into then like the Tesla investment, SpaceX, and then it's become worth hundreds of billions. But it wasn't his first business that made him all the money. And so I think having for me like financial security to be like great, like I know for sure once this business is done, hopefully touch wood we can sell it, I will be back within probably 4 weeks for the next one
Well, you have the
and
folder. You have the
then
folder with all those ideas. You can go back and
yeah.
revisit and go, why didn't I do the Velcro pants years ago? My third question, and I know you're going to run out of time, and I but so we're involved with Gather, and it's been a great outlet for us. So you're bringing the service providers, the VCs, and the founders together. And a good bit of what Gather is UK to UK, and we're a part of the Gather platform and service providers that specifically are for US expansion. So can you share a little bit about how the needs for founders change when they're going, I'm building within the UK, or I'm headed across the ocean to the the big brother economy.
Yeah, I think what's really interesting is it's the same thing, right? It's when you first start in the UK as a pre-seed founder, you need everything from scratch and you don't know how anything works. And then you build that up. And then when you go to the US, you need everything again from scratch. Because ultimately, what you're building in the US is not, you're not taking a, probably taking a 50 person company to the US. You're taking a one person company to the US and you're starting from there.
So ultimately, what you are thinking about is that every time you go to new geography, you're ultimately just building the same company, but from some day dot. Obviously, you have a lot more learnings and probably HQ support. But you'll need but everything's different. And I think even like trying to build in the UK is probably a bit simpler because everyone are like, UK, you're born here, you understand it. US, completely different world. And then all the tax laws are different, all the state laws are different, all the legal bits by country and where you incorporate and all this stuff. And ultimately, you need to work with experts and professionals to go that. The joy of working with professionals like yourselves as you do this, and ultimately they understand the nuances and also have helped loads of companies do this. I think it's the same footpath of like you've got the resources probably in the UK because you've got to the stage that you can expand. And I think there's obviously a debate. Do you go super early? Do you go super late? When do you go? There's obviously the general don't go in the middle. Like either go to the US straight away, or go to the US when you're like Series A, Series B, and you figured out your UK market. Don't try and figure out two markets at once. I think that's kind of the general rhetoric that people work with. But yeah, ultimately, if you're going over there, like so many of what you do and the other partners we work with in the US expansion are all so great, like giving with their time as well. Go and talk to them and let them show how they can help you do this much simpler. And ultimately, why would you try and learn everything from scratch yourself when you can work with someone who's been there, done that, and got the t-shirt? And I think the final thing I'll say on all of this is like service providers are there to make your life easier. Ultimately, like all of these wonderful providers, whether it's like legal or accounting or marketing or PR or whatever, you have a problem as a business. I need to grow more. I need to get my numbers in the right place. I've got issues with my data. I've got an employment problem. All the providers are doing is helping you fix your problems. And actually, like they're not good providers, don't just sell you stuff you don't need. They sell you the stuff to
Absolutely.
your problems. And ultimately, they're not selling you anything. They're solving your problem in exchange for, time and some money.
Absolutely. Solving the problems for
And
sure.
that is where, like, building a business is ultimately just connecting together lots and lots of other people's expertise into one place and like pumping it together. And actually, that's the amazing thing that we operate in today's world is like, if you need to do something, someone will have done it before. Someone will be an expert. And yes, certainly
Exactly.
lots of money, but time is money as well.
Yeah, and it's the trust factor that you bring. You go, okay, I've gone to gather. I know the folks there, and they're not going to steer me wrong. And it's a place. I mean, so much of the time, the way people still expand is I've got a CFO from a CFO. I know other CFOs. I ask them what they did, and that's great. I mean, so people refer all the time, but having one place where people can come and find trusted connections, community, as you'd say.
Community, love it. But
Yes, you do. And thank you so much. It's a dream listening to you. You're so inspiring. And I'll look forward to seeing you in London soon.
absolutely. Well, thanks very much for having me on. I really, really appreciate it. It's been absolutely great to chat to
And you too, Mark.
you.
Take care. Thank you for joining us for this empowering episode featuring Mark Shepard, founder of Gather, the Michelin guide to the tech industry. And thank you, Mark, for sharing your journey. If you enjoyed today's conversation, subscribe to US Expansion Minipod on your favorite platform. Published on the third Wednesday of every month, you'll find engaging US expansion discussions with industry leaders and innovators. Don't forget to share this episode with your network, please. In the comments, you'll find a link to the Gather platform and Mark's LinkedIn profile to learn more about him and his work. This has been Joanne Farquharson, President and CEO of Foothold America, and that wraps up our three questions for today. Until next time, keep expanding your horizons.